This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Governor Roy Cooper continues his battle with the Republican-led General Assembly. Last week, Cooper vetoed a bill to combine the state elections and ethics boards. This week, the state House and Senate overrode that veto. Meanwhile, a battle looms over control of the courts. Cooper also vetoed a bill last week that shrinks the number of judges on the state court of appeals. That measure would prevent the governor from replacing the next three judges who retire. Joining us now is Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Let's talk about this veto override earlier this week. Last week, the governor vetoed a measure that consolidates the state elections and ethics board. So remind us what that's all about.
For decades, the State Board of Elections has been a five-member board that is in line with the governor's party, meaning under Governor McCrory, three Republicans, two Democrats. Governor Cooper would presumably inherit that appointment power. However, lawmakers moved during a special session, one of the five that took place in 2016, to combine the five-member State Board of Elections and the eight-member State Ethics Board into one eight-member board in which there would be four Democrats and four Republicans, effectively removing some of the appointment power or gusto that the governor would have. It was challenged and in part struck down in court. They're making another effort now, legislative move to create an eight-member board. It was vetoed. It has been overridden. The concern from the governor is that this is an eight-member board, and what might we have if there is an even number of folks? We could have deadlocks and many, many deadlocks. Cooper's stance, the governor, is that this is going to grind things to a halt. It's going to make it harder for people to register and to vote. The Republicans, one of the things they are saying is that, you know, a lot of the decisions that take place at the State Board of Elections, also under this bill, local election boards would move from three to four. But what the Republicans are saying is, listen, there aren't going to be a lot of 2-2 splits. There aren't going to be a lot of deadlocks at the state level because the majority of the decisions that these boards have to work through are unanimous anyway. So,
except for the political ones.
Yes, which, as we saw after the McCrory-Cooper finish in November, there were just a few of those, and unfounded allegations of fraud. We'll get to that some other
time. Now, is there still a chance that this final override, so the bill goes into effect, but are there legal challenges?
Yeah. Not officially at this point. I would not be surprised if I would expect to see some sort of legal challenge from the governor because so much of this is playing out in the courts, right?
All right. Last week, Governor Cooper vetoed a measure that shrinks the bench in the Court of Appeals from 15 to 12. So tell us more about that.
So Court of Appeals, second largest court in the state. And right now there is an 11-4 split, Republicans to Democrats. Over the next several years, three of those Republicans will retire when they turn 72, as is mandated by state law. And the forecast is that the governor would appoint those seats and it will move to an 8-7 split. So you'd have a little more parity. You'd have a little more balance within the court. What the legislature wants to do is to reduce the court from 15 to 12 so that when these judges have to retire at 72, there is no replacing them. There is no opportunity for Cooper to appoint, and the court over time will shrink from 15 to 12. They're making the case that there is a reduced caseload and there isn't the need for 15 judges. Now, just one quick note, the Court of Appeals sits in three judge panels across the state. Now, virtually every law person I've talked to says, well, there has been a slight reduction in caseload. It's not enough to warrant a change. There are legal journals that have cited the North Carolina Court of Appeals as one of the most efficient courts in the country. So they're essentially saying, you know, this is a change that nobody has asked for and is not needed. And again, we're talking about the power grab. That's what, you know, has come back into play here. So with the Court of Appeals, there is a judge, Douglas McCullough, who has been spending a lot of time thinking about this because he turned 72 in a little more than a month. And he decided on Monday to announce his resignation effective immediately. McCullough is a Republican. Hours later, Cooper appointed a Democrat to fill that seat until the term expires in 2018, throwing this plan of reduction into some chaos. I mean, the courts might have otherwise done that, but again, just theater and chaos, and who knows exactly what's going to happen from here. But this caught Republican lawmakers by surprise, to be sure.
So if they override the veto and the bill goes into effect and becomes law, what it would suggest is that the next three resignations, not this one, would be affected by this law.
Right. But to play that out, not all of those three resignations, which would be required by state law upon when a judge turns 72, will take place during Cooper's first term. So to play it out, and you know, crystal ball here, what if a Republican wins in 2020 and Cooper's a one-term governor? Then what does a legislature do? Are you trying to limit the appointment powers of a Republican governor? I wonder about that.
All right. Well, let's talk more about the classroom size, because there's another bill that the Senate passed affecting classroom sizes in kindergarten through third grade. Tell us more about that.
This is something that was passed out of the General Assembly last summer, and it is in line with the philosophy, more so of Republicans in the Senate, but a lot of Republicans in both chambers, to reduce the average and maximum class size in kindergarten through third grades across the state. And it had to be originally implemented for the upcoming academic year. And school districts, administrators, educator advocacy groups across the state were saying, hold on, we have to slow this down, or we have to make a change, because if you think about spreading out the students and creating smaller class sizes, you have to have enough teachers to cover all of those smaller classes, right? So what local districts have been upset about or worried about is what happens with specialized teachers, music, phys ed, and art. And they've been saying for a while that this is essentially an unfunded mandate, and it was going to lead to thousands of layoffs for these teachers. So they've reached a compromise or a stopgap measure. You can call it a couple of different things, but this new requirement for average class size, maximum class size, does not have to be in effect for this coming academic year. Essentially, the can has been nudged down the road for a year. It has passed with wide support, but the concern is that it doesn't really address the funding problem for a year from now, and there are still some concerns that it could lead to a lot of layoffs of these art, phys ed, and music teachers.
Meanwhile, while we're waiting a year from now to see how that's resolved, much closer and more imminent is the crossover. Tell us about Crossover Week.
Crossover is this self-mandated thing that the legislature does, and it's typically about halfway through a session, and it says that a bill has to cross over from one chamber to the other, House to Senate or vice versa, and if it does not, it's dead. That's not entirely true. I mean, it's not actually dead. It is a good way to effectively weed through a lot of the bills. There have been about 1,600 pieces of legislation filed since January. But it is a week of organized chaos, if you will, at the General Assembly, and really a frenetic pace to things.
We are getting a legislative update today on the state of things. Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri is with us, and it doesn't affect appropriations bills, right? So there are certain bills that are accepted and that can cross over even later, which means that you can still get a bill in as an amendment. I mean, there are all kinds of exceptions to the rule, right?
Yes, appropriations is one. And sometimes you'll see a bill that has nothing to do with an appropriation or a tax or a fee, but sometimes a legislator will attach a money note to it, even if it's something very small, so that it's not subject to crossover. Constitutional amendments, proposed constitutional amendments, not applicable to crossover. And there's always this gut and amend provision, where if there's a bill that a Republican wants to just totally overhaul later on this spring, he or she could do that through the gut and amend process. So many ways around crossover.
All right. So, and it's a thing. On the one hand, it's a way, as you say, if it hasn't made it to the other chamber by now, it's dead. Why don't we just call it? On the other hand, you spoke with Joe Stewart, who's the executive director of a nonpartisan group in called North Carolina Free Enterprise Foundation. He said, you know, it does create some problems.
It is a vestige of a bygone era, and it creates a certain kind of dynamic within the legislative process that perhaps separates the sheep from the goats. But it is an artificial barrier nonetheless, and it creates a lot of stress and anxiety on all fronts in the legislative process. And that probably in and of itself is reason not to do it anymore.
All right. There's the executive director of the North Carolina Free Enterprise Foundation, Joe Stewart. You also talked to Pricey Harrison about this, and maybe you can give some context, because she's going to talk about an economic terrorism bill that she'll mention in this clip.
I'll set it up as follows. I was trying to connect with a lawmaker yesterday for a story about crossover, and I was texting back and forth with her. It was 9 o'clock, then it was 10, 10:30, 12, and she said, I might be able to talk with you at 2:30. And I wanted to get my story in selfishly before that. I said, can I come find you? She said, come to this committee meeting. I'll step out and I'll meet with you for a couple minutes. Outside of that committee room, there was a table that generally could fold up, but there were almost two dozen bills on that table. And there's a lot of activity going on inside the room, inside other committee rooms. And transparency and vetting are not something that are always readily available at the General Assembly. And that, to be fair, that goes back to Democratic leadership as well. But transparency and vetting are at perhaps even more of a minimum during this week of crossover. And that was evident in chatting with Pricey Harrison.
Pricey Harrison, a Democrat from Guilford, talking about crossover.
Last night, I received something like 1,700 emails related to one of the bills on the calendar related to economic terrorism. It's quite overwhelming. It's difficult to be prepared. You get the drafts of the new bills, at least we're getting on the night before now, but the chance to review for five different committee meetings, something like 20 to 30 different bills. It's a long night, long days.
Pricey Harrison, Democrat in Guilford County.
Speed. It's about speed. Yeah. And if you crank it up to sixth speed, you can ram stuff through. And you can also, one other thing Joe Stewart said to me was you can move things forward under, the guise of, hey, we have this deadline to meet. Let's move this bill forward and we'll fix it on the other side. But things don't always get fixed on the other side.
Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Talk to you soon.
Links to Jeff's work at our website, stateofthings.com. Just ahead, the most comprehensive plan ever proposed for reversing global warming. You will hear it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.